My name's Matthew, I'm the lead pastor here. So this time of year obviously is a big deal for us in terms of giving. A significant proportion of our annual income comes in during this time of year at year end. So I just want to encourage you, please give generously this time of the year. In terms of our annual goal for 2019, we're just shy of about $100,000 before we hit our goal. And we've raised that amount this time of year before in 3 weeks. We've got three more Sundays to go. So we can do this. Let's just pull together, continue to give generously. Thank you for your faithfulness throughout the year. As Colin was saying there, it's not just the money, it's all the service and love and care that goes into this community from people like you and me who are just giving their lives to it that makes this community tick. So thank you so much for the part that you play. Just wouldn't be the same without you. Thank you. We're in a series at the moment called Experiencing the Story. So it's Advent. Today's the third Sunday of Advent. And we're going to take a slightly different approach to the previous 2 weeks. What we're doing is, if you remember, we're looking at the Christmas story through different practices of reading Scripture. So the Christmas story is found in the birth narratives are found in Matthew's Gospel and Luke's Gospel. And in the first week of Advent, first Sunday of Advent, we took what we might call an imaginative approach. We had different stations and different experiences together where we experienced the story of Christmas through a tradition known as the Ignatian tradition, where we use our imaginations to kind of sink into the story and try and experience it that way. Last week, we used study as a way of looking at Scripture. So we kind of wrestled with some of the ancient prophecies, some of the ancient Hebrew prophecies, some of the parts of the birth narrative in Matthew's Gospel and Luke's Gospel, and we talked about Jesus as Messiah, as the promised Hebrew Messiah, and the kind of incredible notion that this man, Jesus of Nazareth, a carpenter from a backwater of Galilee, is being claimed to be Messiah, the promised one, with all those incredible prophecies about him. And that we sort of wrestled a little bit with the shock of that, and then perhaps thinking about how we just take that for granted in our own lives. We use the term Christ for Jesus like it's his last name, rather than meaning literally Messiah. Or when we call ourselves Christian, which we throw that term around pretty regularly, we're actually saying that we are ones of the Christ tradition. We're ones of the messianic tradition, and we're participating with Jesus in that tradition and bringing hope and life and love to the world in the tradition of Jesus. So that's where we've come from. Today we're going to take a more contemplative approach to Scripture. We're going to use a practice called Lectio Divina. We'll talk about that in a second. And we're going to read John's first, or part of the first chapter of John, together. And this tradition, this way of looking at Scripture, is quite different to last week. Last week, I think I used this term just a minute ago. We wrestled with Scripture. We kind of analyzed Scripture. And it's good that we do that, right? These Scriptures have come down to us through centuries, through millennia, in fact. And so our culture and our world is very far removed from the world in which these Scriptures were written. So we need to really wrestle with the interpretation and look for things that we may have missed, or maybe need to think through again and that kind of stuff. But today we're going to use a practice that really lets Scripture read us. It's like surrendering to the words in the Scripture, believing that God can speak to us through these words, through these Scriptures. Rather than try and intellectually grapple with these, we're just going to let the Scripture flow to us and challenge us in different ways. So what I'm going to do, just get jump straight into it, I'm going to read the passage that we're going to reflect on, right? I'm going to read it once, and then a little bit later on, we're going to read it, believe it or not, four times. Okay, and your heart may have sunk already when you hear that. But let me mention this, and Rachel mentioned this at the beginning of the service. This is a really busy time of year, right? It can be a stressful time of year, ironically. We talk about peace and love and goodwill to all men and that kind of thing, but it can be actually a somewhat stressful time of year. So I guess there's one of two ways of thinking about us slowing down right now in this service to take a more contemplative approach. You could think, you just stole 20 minutes from me, and I could have been doing this, that, the other, right? Writing your list and checking it twice or something like that. Or you could say, oh, what a gift in the middle of all this busyness. I'm just gonna receive it as a gift and take full advantage of it. I strongly urge and encourage you to take the latter approach, right? Otherwise, you're going to be miserable for the next few minutes here. But let's look. So let's listen to the passage. On this occasion, it's going to be projected as well, so you can track along with it. When we take this more meditative approach, we won't be projecting it. So the idea is really just to close our eyes and let it come to us. But let's just read it. I want to make a few comments about the passage afterwards. I want to just say, though, from the outset, this is, let's not try to get too much in our heads on this, right? Some of the things I want to say about it are just to set some context for when we do the meditative reading. But this is not about analyzing. This is about letting it really analyze us and wrestle with us and challenge us. This is John's Gospel, first chapter, first verse. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him, not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood or of the will of the flesh or of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. John testified to him and cried out, "This is he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks ahead of me because he was before me.' From his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. The law indeed was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. It is God, the only Son, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known." Okay, so that's the first 18 verses of chapter 1. We're going to look at that again in a moment. Wanted to mention a few things about this passage. The first one here is we have this term, the Word. And that in the Greek, that's the Logos. And it's a philosophical term. It's a sort of an ancient Hellenistic Greek term for ultimate reason, ultimate truth. It's like the divine order and meaning of the universe. It's like the highest of highest powers, if you like, the deepest of deepest truths. This beginning of John here very universal. It's not just telling a story about a Hebrew Messiah. I mean, there's definitely Hebrew cosmological connotations here, because it begins with "in the beginning," like. There's connotations with the book of Genesis there, or the beginning of the Hebrew scriptures. So it's universal. It's appealing to the whole world as a description of who Jesus is. What are the origins of Jesus? So there's this very big, inviting, universal beginning to the Gospel of John, which is quite different to the way Matthew and Luke talk about the beginnings, right? So that's what that means. That term, the Word, that's what it refers to. And so I'm pretty incredible when you think about it, that just like we said, it was somewhat scandalous that Matthew, Mark, and Luke would present this human being from Nazareth as the Messiah. That here we have that same person, Jesus of Nazareth, being presented to us as the incarnation of the ultimate order and meaning of the universe. I mean, that's pretty incredible. Not just that that's who Jesus is, but even that this higher divine meaning, this higher divine essence, could be born into a very finite, fragile context. The incarnation, the embodiment of that truth, the embodiment of that reason, if you like. So this is a very deep, profound beginning to the gospel, and John continues those kinds of themes throughout. Okay, so that's just to give a little bit of context to what that part means there. Again, let's not get too in our heads over this. The other thing I want to mention, and I mention this because it might, for some of us, be perhaps a little distraction in the reading, is just like last week, we noted how Matthew and Luke, and Mark actually, go out of their way to explain that John the Baptist was not the Messiah, right? Well, here, I don't know if you noticed, there's this sort of flowing poetry, and then it stops. By the way, John the Baptist was not that person. You know, he wasn't the light. He was the one. And it even quotes some of what John the Baptist says about Jesus, just to let us know that that's not who we're talking about. So what we have here is probably, and a lot of scholars would say, this passage is probably based on a poem, a hymn, something that pre-existed the writing down of this particular scripture, into which editorial has been put. So, you know, we have the sort of the flow of in the beginning was the Word and the Word was with God. And then there's some editorial comments being inserted in here. Now, that's typical of scripture, right? The Bible didn't just fall out of the sky. It's not a magical book. We believe God speaks to us through the scriptures, but they've come to us through community, people who wrote them down in the first place. People who have edited them, people who have, you know, there's books in the Bible that are interpretations of other books in the Bible. So it's almost like self-commentary at times. And they've been handed down to us over the years. There are books that do not appear in our Bible, right? That our ancestors, our community, through deliberation and over centuries decided, no, these are the ones that should be in. These are the ones we hold sacred. So we can trust that process, right? It's not a magical process, but it's evidence to us that these scriptures come to us as sacred. They've come down through centuries, and we can trust them. It doesn't mean we take everything literally. It doesn't mean we don't wrestle with them. But what it does mean, I think, is that we can practice reading scripture in this humble way where we let it critique us. We let, if you like, the centuries of wisdom that it contains challenge us in this moment in which we find ourselves living and breathing. So let's not be distracted by some of that. Let's just take it all. We're going to read the whole passage. That particular point I mentioned might be of interest to you. That might be somewhere where you focus on, or it might not be. But, you know, if it feels disjointed, that's the reason for it. One other thing I wanted to mention before we read it is this issue of grace and truth. So there's a big emphasis there towards the end that Jesus is full of grace and truth. The Logos is full of grace and truth. And I think that's an important concept for us even to take into the reading of Scripture and into the next few minutes. Grace is like unmerited favor, right? It's getting what we don't deserve. It's the ultimate free lunch, if you like. And I think most of us probably love that concept. It's wonderful to get things that you don't deserve, and it's wonderful to be let off the hook, you know, if you like. But there's also something that we struggle with about that. We live in a very, we live in a meritocracy, right? We live in a culture that says you get what you deserve. If you work hard, you'll benefit from it. If things aren't going your way, it's probably your fault. You know, we live in that kind of culture, right? And so grace isn't, it feels uncomfortable to us because I think there's something about us that wants to earn everything we get, because then we can kind of own it and it just, you know, we feel better about ourselves. But this is all about grace. So as we read the scriptures, we let the scriptures challenge us, as really what we're doing, I think, in some way is saying, we're letting the Logos speak through these scriptures and challenge us. We're letting the divine presence challenge us. That divine presence is grace. It's not here to condemn us, to judge us, but it's here to set us free. And that's the sort of flip side, I guess, of the grace part. So it's grace and truth. Truth is another thing that I think we all love. We all want the truth, right? But we're also a little afraid of the truth, because truth that can be revealing. It makes us feel vulnerable, right? We feel like we maybe, you know, we're under the spotlight. And also, and you know, if you're anything like me, this is something I struggle with. It's the fact that we have to face the fact we've got to change, right? Truth means, you know, it's honesty, and that means probably we're going to have to change. So, in this reading, we're going to have grace and truth operation, right? And that really for me is, it's love. You know, grace and truth are part of love, because grace is not condemning, but truth actually is what sets us free, right? Imagine we can allow the very divine presence, the Logos, to come to us and not be afraid. Because it's full of grace, but also full of truth that can actually bring about change in our lives, can bring about a new honesty that sets us on the pathway to change. And that really, to me, that's love. So if God is love, then, and God is the Logos, then the Logos is love. And so I'm going to, in that context, I'm going to light this candle this week, the third Advent candle, because that represents love. You know, we had hope on the first week. Peace on last week, and then this week it's love. And as we go through the rest of this service, I'd encourage you, if at any point you get distracted or at any point you feel you know, you lost your way, just open your eyes and look at this candle. I hope it's going to burn really brightly. Yeah, it's picking up now. That's this, the rose colored candle. And just let it recenter you on love, on grace and truth. Okay. We're going to read now. We have this practice, Lectio Divina, is a centuries-old practice that people have used to go through reading a passage of Scripture in a contemplative kind of way. Maybe we can just put that up. Actually, it's the slide with the... Lectio Divina, that's it, great. So that's what it is. It's a Latin term, and things just sound more spiritual when you say them in Latin, right? So... and you sound way more intelligent as well. It just means divine reading, you know. There you go. And there's four stages to it. Lectio, which is Latin for read. So the first stage, we're just going to read it and let it sort of wash over us, and just be sort of aware there might be a word, a phrase, a concept, something might stand out. Don't sweat it too much. Just sort of let it come at you. And as that happens, just take note of it, you know, if something stands out. Then the second phase will be meditatio, which, guess what that means? It means meditate, right? And this is the point where we're going to let the Scripture really kind of read us. So we're just going to, and especially as we read it again, if there's a piece that stood out to you first time round, kind of home in on that and just let that challenge you. And then all this, you know, we can't control the outcomes, right? We don't know what's going to happen. We're just going to put ourselves in that space and see how this goes. The third reading is oratio, meaning to pray. And what we'll do in that stage then is kind of sit with the challenge of this and have some conversations with God and sort of wrestle with it a bit. Again, I'd encourage you not pushing back too much, but just say, okay, what is it you're challenging me with? What does this mean to me? In the context of grace and truth, What's going on here? And then the fourth reading is the final one, is contemplatio. And what we do there is just contemplate. We're just going to sit with it and rest with it. And we might have got stirred up a bit in that third reading. And we're just going to return to a center. We might want to use the candles to kind of center us back there. Or we might just want to sit and kind of just be with God in that context. Be with the divine presence, be with the Logos in that final reading. So I'm going to read now. As I said, we're going to read four times. It takes me just shy of 2 minutes to read the passage, and after each one, we're going to have 3 minutes of silence. Okay, so you've done the math already, and you know that's 20 minutes, right? So we'll probably struggle, you know, to stay focused on the reading each time. because that takes about 2 minutes. We might wander. We might struggle to stay focused during those 3 minutes of silence. We might think, really, again? Are we reading this again? Okay, so, and again, I just encourage you, come back to a center. Come back to the candle. It might be helpful just to return to be conscious of your breathing. Do something that can just, okay, I'm coming back and I'm going to let this this reading challenge me. I'm going to put myself in the way of the flow of this reading. What we'll do at the end of the reading is we'll have the final moment of silence, and then we're going to sing a song together. The band will lead us in a song. We can stay seated for that. And that will then lead us into communion. Okay, so for communion, I won't get up again and say anything more about this, but we'll have all the usual things we do for communion. So we can serve one another at the front here, gluten-free crackers and fruit juice, or at the table here. That's where we serve one another. And then people will appear at those doors at the side and serve, if you'd like to be served, the communion. We have stations where you can give generously at the giving stations here, under Hope and Serve. You can write out prayers under Grow and Journey at the back there. And then we'll have people at the back to pray with you as well if you'd like to come back for some prayer. So we'll sing that song and then Brian will invite us up for communion. Okay, so let's just center ourselves. I would encourage you to close your eyes. Open your heart. Be expectant. And let's read. So we're just going to receive this now. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood, or of the will of the flesh, or of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's Son, full of grace and truth. John testified to him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks ahead of me because he was before me.' From his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. The law indeed was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. It is God, the only Son, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known." going to read again. This time just home in on something that caught your attention. And then we'll, you know, it might be a theme, a word, a phrase. And then we'll spend some time meditating on that. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him, not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light, the true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him. Yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood or of the will or of the flesh or of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. John testified to him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks ahead of me because he was before me.' From his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. The law indeed was given through Moses. Grace and truth come through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. It is God, the only Son, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known."
So after this reading, it's oratio, or prayer. We'll talk to God about what we've meditated on, about what's challenging us. Open your hearts in the atmosphere of grace and truth. Don't be afraid of anything. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood, or of the will of the flesh, or of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. John testified to him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks ahead of me because he was before me.'" From his fullness, we have all received grace upon grace. The law indeed was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. It is God, the only Son, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known.
So this is the final reading. It's
we're just going to sit and rest and contemplate after this. Whatever's gone on internally for you, that's for you. That's between you and God. So sit with it as a gift and soak it in. Rest with it. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood or of the will or of the flesh or of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. John testified to him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks ahead of me because he was before me.' From his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. The law indeed was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. It is God the only Son who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known."